Today on Maine Calling, new farmers carrying on Maine's agricultural heritage. What do you picture when you think of a farm in Maine? Fields of green, classic barns, happy cows. More than 7,000 farms across the state produce the crops and livestock for which Maine is known. From berries to beets, chickens to hogs, flowers to fish. And nowadays, there are new farmers hard at work making a living off the land or sea. Some are switching careers to pursue the rural lifestyle. Others are young people taking over for older farmers. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we'll learn who Maine's new farmers are and what obstacles and opportunities they face. And we'll hear from experts about what beginning farmers need to know to succeed. This show is part of our year-long series examining the changing face of Maine. What it takes to be a farmer. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. By Maine Seacoast Mission, strengthening Maine's coastal and island communities through education, health, and support. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we'll find out who Maine's new farmers are, people from all walks of life who have started farming for different reasons. And our panelists will offer guidance on what beginning farmers need to know. This show is part of Maine Calling's ongoing series, The Changing Face of Maine. My guests are Rhiannon Hampson, Maine State Director for USDA Rural Development, and she's a farmer. Ann Martin is Program Coordinator for the Boots to Bushels Market Garden Program with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. And Isabel Mullen, dairy farmer with Russellwood Farm in Kittery. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you ever wished you could become a farmer? Do you have questions about where to start? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And Rhiannon, let's start with you. Give us a sense of how much a part of Maine's economy is agricultural and what direction is that going in? Are people getting out of farming, getting into farming? What does it look like?
Well, thank you so much, Cindy, for having us to talk. And one of the things I would highlight is that the folks that you have assembled for this call are also friends and collaborators in this community. And I think that that actually speaks to sort of the nature of Maine farming. It's part of our fabric, our community fabric. As far as economic impact, obviously that changes year to year. And when we're talking about different commodities pricing for some of our larger crops, but we can all agree that farms in Maine are economic engines. There's a reason that there's a farmer on our flag. And that's because we have foundationally built sort of the nature of our state on these, you know, this heritage industry of farming. So when we're seeing folks come into the state to farm, it's exciting. I don't want to get into Ann's territory there at all. But I tell people all of the time that that small diesel engine mechanic is not going to stay in business just to fix our tractor. And that milk hauler is not going to stay in business just to haul one load of milk. So we rely on folks coming in. We rely on this kind of economic engine of our small communities to be there. And we're excited about some of the trends we're seeing for folks coming in.
So trend-wise, is there an increase? Are we stable as far as the number of farms in the state?
I would say from our perspective at Rural Development, we are certainly seeing more and more people coming to us for farmer support programming. And I think that that speaks to folks coming into the state of Maine to be able to kind of access funding, to explore new and better markets, and to grow their farm businesses. So while we all know that we've lost a significant number of dairy farms in the last several years, and I do not want to be dismissive of the struggles that we're having in maintaining our farm economy, I also am hopeful when we're seeing folks come to us for our Rural Energy for America program grants. A lot of those folks are new to farming and they're wanting to make these investments. And these are not small investments. So generally when folks are coming to us for that kind of program dollar, they're looking to stay here for quite a while and to grow those businesses.
And what are you seeing from your work? You work with a lot of new farmers. Do you get a sense of who some of these new farmers in Maine are? Are they people who've grown up on a farm and came back, or young people coming here from other places, or even midlife older people leaving their careers for a new way of life? What are you seeing a lot of?
Yeah. Good morning, Cindy. Again, thank you for having us and letting us, you know, share a little bit about what's going on in Maine with new farmers. And I don't know if my data is a little bit skewed because I work with the Cooperative Extension, and I particularly specifically work with Maine Agribility, which we can talk about later if we get an opportunity. So we see the clientele that come to the University Cooperative Extension tends to be a little bit older, and they are people that are coming out. Most of them are coming out of Maine careers. So I just I consult a lot with new farmers that are either already in Maine and wanting to get started or take their business to the next level. I talk to people that are not even in Maine yet, but are looking to purchase property. And those are our favorite ones because we can help them identify what types of soil and where they should go, you know, for their particular commodity that they want to try and work with. But I definitely, so on the trend side, from what I'm seeing since about 2020, when I started the Boots to Bushels program, the folks tend to be a little bit older, so older in the 40s to 50s range. They're coming in after this is their second or third career even. And many, I think the majority of them have had some kind of tie to Maine previously. Either they were here as a younger person and they went off and did some other things and wanted to come back to the Maine lifestyle, the Maine rural community. And some of them had some background in farming as well, but I think the majority of the folks that I talk to really haven't had that background in farming and are just hungry to learn and hungry to get back to the land and hungry to feed their community. And everybody understands that, you know, we can do this food revolution and you know, bridging the gap between food insecurity, just one small farm at a time. And Maine is a perfect place to do that.
Great. And Isabel, that reflects a little bit of your story. You have an interesting story to share, a little bit about what Anne was mentioning. Tell us how it is, what your early exposure to farming was, and how it is that you are where you are now.
Thanks, Cindy. Yeah, thanks so much for having us. So my farming journey started before I was born. My mom grew up as the youngest of nine on a dairy farm in Kittery, Maine. She moved away from the farm, but obviously we came back to visit my grandparents as I was growing up. And I had the opportunity to do 4-H, and I did that from about the age of 9 to 12, which was some really wonderful introductory experience into education about animals, particularly the dairy cows I was working with. But as I got older, I grew up in Cape Elizabeth, which is, as you guys probably know, not a community known for its large animal agriculture. And so I got pulled away into other interests and things like that, and ended up spending most of my adult career up to this point in Maine law and politics. And I really enjoyed that and got to work on a lot of cool policies at the State House. But during the pandemic, I found myself moving back closer and closer to agriculture until I finally decided to make the decision in May of last year to leave and return full time to the family dairy farm where I am today with my uncle and his family.
So you are running things now?
I am not running things. I'm full time help. I do some of the business management and record keeping. I do our herds management. But I think one of the things that's beautiful about farming is you don't have to own a farm to be a farmer. If you really love it, there's a benefit of working on a farm. It's a great opportunity to learn and try things. And there's also the benefit of, you know, thinking long term about transition plans and things like that.
That's a great point. And Rhiannon, you too are a dairy farmer as well. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I always refer to myself as a reluctant dairy farmer, actually. Cindy, I fell in love with a dairy farmer. And one of the things that we do try to tell people, especially when they're getting into farming, is that it's a lifestyle, not just a business. So if you are going in, you're all in. It is your every day. So I begin and end my days on an 80-acre dairy farm and pastured livestock farm in Thomaston. We're sandwiched between the St. George River and Route 1. Provides a pretty interesting view some days. We have the best of both worlds. And, you know, we really, uh, I approach it more from a policy standpoint. Obviously, Greg works full time on the farm, the equivalent of probably two or three farmers. So that I can work off farm, I try to make things better for all of us. A rising tide truly lifts all boats. So I spend a lot of my time working on that policy perspective to try to uplift our entire farm economy here in Maine. But I think that having the very quite literal grounding, getting your boots dirty and slogging through mud and having to take a week off to deal with turkey harvest and all of these things gives me a perspective when I do work on this policy that that lived experience is something that is so invaluable. And I think it's incredibly important for people to hear from that space.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you about this romanticized idea of what farming is like, the beautiful pastures and, you know, lovely animals and produce. So what would you say is, you know, you probably tell people this too, you know, what is the hard reality that you would tell someone you have to do X, you have to do Y when you're a farmer?
So the hard reality is we miss birthdays, we miss funerals, we miss holiday dinner. Right? We change the way that we engage with the rest of those things. And so in order to make that all worth it, first, we eat really well. We feel like we're making an impact. Rockefeller is not my last name. I'm not going to be able to make an impact in this world to tackle the issues of climate change or inequities in our systems in ways that are driven by finance. I'm not going to be able to do that. And so what we can do, our family, Greg and Ruby, Madden and I, can get up every single day and we can try to spend our energy and our time and use that as our equity investment in creating the society that we want to see. And it probably sounds very Pollyanna-ish to some people because it is actually really hard when your structures are getting blown over and you're losing livestock and it's Christmas and it's 50 below zero and you're in a dairy pit. But it is, it's what we can give back. And I think when people stick with it, they find that that is somehow fulfilling enough to do it another day.
And follow up on that with the tough part, the elements that you teach through the Boots to Bushels program, that there's planning, there's the business side, there's all of that. So tell us a little bit about what you teach people and what you think some of the harder aspects are.
Yeah, and I definitely would love to dovetail on what Rhiannon is saying. So my program is originally started out as focusing on military veterans transitioning out of the military and into this world of farming. I myself am a 27-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps and came to Maine specifically to farm. And so up until, you know, 2 years ago, I was farming a 72-acre farm in Midcoast Maine, organic diversified veggies. And you're absolutely right. So I think one of the things, especially for folks coming out of the military community, a lot of great skills, a lot of great soft skills, people, leadership, teamwork, resilience, all that, a lot of great technical skills. But the business and the entrepreneurial side of the house is something that we were never trained on in the military. And I find that even with, you know, non-military folks, just new beginning farmers. And so we do talk a lot about, you know, production is one aspect of it. And frankly, that's the easiest part of farming. The hard part is the marketing and the bookkeeping and understanding your taxes and understanding the implications for taking in a grant or a loan. And, you know, all of those things, like my program, we have had over 140 some people come through since 2020. And not the majority do not go into full-time farming afterwards. And frankly, I'm okay with that. I kind of see that as a win because they through the 9 months of the programming, they get a chance to understand like, hey, I love growing food for me and for my small little community, but I'm not ready to go into that big business leap and take all my finances to, you know, do whatever needs to be done so that I can make the money back in 5-10 years. You know, that's a real labor of love, and you have to be very dedicated and want to be an entrepreneur and go down that route. And if there's people that I can save from spending their life savings, you know, up front and having to take out multiple loans, then that's a win to me. But there are people that want to continue to do that, and they see, you know, the long-term benefits. And there's another aspect, especially from the veteran point of view. I think once we leave military service, you know, we've spent our entire adult lives in service to others. And when you leave the military, you kind of lose a little bit of purpose. And I found that a lot of the folks that get into agriculture after leaving the military, they find their next yes, is, you know, how I phrase it. Because, you know, at one point we raised our hands and said yes to defending our constitution and you know, defending our way of life and freedom. And now this is just another way to add purpose into our lives of serving, you know, our community through good food.
Well, joining us now is Ryan Dennett. She's Director of Farmer Programs for Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, or MOFCA. Thanks for calling, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So MOFCA is well known even nationally for the beginning farmers programs that you offer. Tell us about the apprenticeship program.
Sure. We have had an apprenticeship program since 1971 and have trained 2,900 apprentices through that program. And it's actually a matching service for people who apply our match farm. They are hourly employees on that farm, but the farm has made a commitment to also provide additional education and support the apprentice in attending our weekly farm training project series of workshops on the farm that's meant to supplement their education so they can see what happens on other farms, maybe that is different from what they're seeing on the farm that they're working on. People go through that program and many, that's sort of like the entrance to the pipeline of beginning farmer training that we offer and you know, a lot of other programs support as well.
And I understand there's a next step up from that, the journeyman, and that's for people who have a little more experience.
The journeyperson program, yes. And Rhiannon and Anne have both been through that program. We've been running that program since 2009 and have trained nearly 400 farmers. I believe it's like 87% of those folks are still farming today. And so that is the next step for farmers that are in their first few years of business. It's a 2-year cohort program, and we pay farmers of their choice to mentor them. We provide individual support and technical assistance through doing farm visits, helping them with any, you know, pest problems or growing and production problems they have, assistance with business and marketing. And they have free access to our workshops, can attend our annual conference, receive an education stipend, and complete a 10-session business planning course that we call Farm Beginnings, which Anne has actually helped teach before. And so we have a steady demand for that program. We're accepting about 12 farms each year, which is about half the people that apply to the program. So that has been really steady. I would say the apprentice program, that peaked in the recession of 2008. I think we had like 300 people participate that year, and has been on a steady decline for a number of reasons. I think that people are just entering the farming pipeline in a different way now, as a lot of the former host farms have been in business longer and felt like that model is no longer a good fit for them. We've certainly made the program more rigorous, and a number of apprentices are just starting to farm by just working as employees on farms.
Okay, that was the point the others were making as well, that you don't have to own a farm. You can work on one and still count. And Anne told us a little bit about what the trends are in people getting into farming. What are you seeing as far as who's coming into these programs?
Yeah, I would agree with Anne that I'm sure what I'm seeing is a skewed version of what is happening in Maine. And right now, I would say, so when I was coordinating our journeyperson program, and Anne was part of that cohort around like 2015, and maybe a few years after that, we were also seeing a large number of second career farmers, and they had, you know, a particular set of opportunities and challenges. They had a lot of, or relatively more financial access to land, but less production experience. So the challenge there was making sure that they didn't lose the financial assets that they had. I think now here at MOFCA, we're seeing a lot, we've kind of gone back to seeing a lot more younger first career farmers and they are very much lacking access to capital and land. That's a huge barrier. And as a result, we're seeing far few farmers who want to raise livestock because that requires a lot of infrastructure and land. We're seeing people farming on much smaller acreage, looking to grow flowers, which are very profitable per square foot. So it allows them to have a viable business on small acreage. Same thing with greens and medicinal herbs. We continue to see a lot of women farmers. We're seeing more farmers who are not in a like business partnership with their romantic partner, but are either farming alone or with just a business partner. And we're seeing a lot more LGBTQ farmers in our programs, which I think has a lot to do with representation in our programs and the way that we've changed them to be more welcoming.
Great. That's so interesting. So thank you, Ryan. Ryan Dennett directs the farm programs for MOFCA. We're going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. We're talking about new farmers in Maine, who they are and what challenges they face, and what resources are available to beginning farmers. Joining me, Ann Martin. She's program coordinator for Boots to Bushels with UMaine Cooperative Extension. Isabel Mullen, she's a new farmer with Russell Wood Farm in Kittery. And Rhiannon Hampson, she's the Maine State Director for USDA Rural Development. Share your comments and questions. Are you a new farmer or do you want to get into farming? Email at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Muhyiddin Liba, Executive Director of Liberation Farms in Wales. Muhyiddin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you so much for inviting me to this program.
Could you say your name for me? I want to make sure I got that right.
My name is Muhyiddin Liba.
Muhyiddin. Okay, thank you. And can you describe how Liberation Farms got started and what it is that you do?
Yes. When we came to Maine in 2005, 2006, people were coming to Maine just trying to go to a rural area similar to where we come from. So our people, almost all of them are farmers from back home. Their background is farming. So when we settled down in the state of Maine, people started asking, how can we be a farmer? Because that is all we knew from back home. Our ancestors were farmers, grandparents were farmers. We started farming at a young age. So people started looking around and trying to get a program that they can join. So cultivating community was there at the time, but access was a little bit tricky. Because cultivating community was a training program, they could only accept so much. So I was asked by my board of directors to go and look for a piece of land to start a new program. So it took me 5 years to just get a piece of land. And the first piece of land was in North Yarmouth, about 40 minutes from Lewiston. So we started with 20 farmers. In 2014, and people started growing what they know. And I was so surprised to see some people had some African flint corn and some kidney beans in their luggage, and they took out and started putting on the ground. So after 2014, the program has been creating a track, and people are getting more interested. And people started producing their own fresh fruits and vegetables. From there, we got back to the drawing table and said, how can we start economic activities out of this farming that we have? So right now, we have 220 community gardeners farming with us as of 2022. It will be more 2023. But there are two wings of the program. One wing is called cooperative farming. Five people will get a group, and they will farm cooperatively. They will work together. They will harvest together. They will wash and pack together. And then the program will aggregate all the food, and we have wholesale accounts that we sell into. So we have 9 groups. Each group consists of 5 people, and they are producing fresh fruits and vegetables for the wholesale market. That group goes to 3 different farmers markets. The first farmers market is in Yarmouth, which is Thursday. On Friday, they go to Freeport Farmers Market Friday morning, and in the evening on Friday, they go to Norway Farmers Market. So the fourth one that is going to start today, this year, will be Gray Farmers Market, which will be on Sunday from 9 to 1. The other people are the group that are just producing their food for their families and their friends. And now we have a piece of land on Wales, Maine, which is 20 minutes from downtown Lewiston. And we're going to be having around 250 farmers, 2023. And we are producing 40 varieties of vegetables.
Wow. So Muhyiddin, how can people find out that information? Should they go to your website or to social media to know where to find the products?
Yes. We have a social media account. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have a website, and it's right on Route 26. We have
Great.
A bulletin board that is visible to everybody. Everybody's welcome. It's not restricted to anybody. People can drive in. We have like a road assigned for people who just want to come and socialize, come and talk to us, come and like just even driving around, looking what people are doing. We have a unique farming method where we don't use machinery. We use tools, hand tools like hoes, to weed the plants. So I have seen people enjoying just watching people work really hard. I have seen people who just came out and talked to the farmers. So people can easily walk into the to the farm and see if you're nearby, just come in and say hello.
That's great.
You can see us on Facebook, and we have an Instagram and website.
Okay, well, thank you so much for sharing all the great work that's being done. That was Muhyiddin Liba. He's Executive Director of Liberation Farms. And Isabel, I wanted to loop back to you because we have talked somewhat about the challenges that, you know, beyond the wonderful parts of farming. And I'm just curious for you, what have you found to be challenging in the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, so I think Rhiannon spoke to it earlier. It's definitely style, not a job or career. It's, I think, a big challenge, you know, physically, mentally, it's all a lot. But it's also, I think the financial part of it is hard. You know, if you're not a farm owner or looking to be a farm owner, the salaries are not competitive with a lot of the other work that exists right now, or at least that's been my experience on a family farm. And so I feel pretty privileged that in my prior career, I was able to save up and secure housing and whatnot. So that gives me some flexibility to work on the farm and be dedicated to this life. It's challenging in navigating relationships with family and friends who wish that I had more time to spend with them. But it's all, for me, at the end of the day, farming is what is in my blood or in my soul. And so for me, it's worth it. But I think to Anne and Rhiannon's points, like having some experience or trying it out through all the variety of training programs that are available, the dairy grazing apprenticeship I know exists in the dairy space, is definitely something I'd recommend for someone interested in getting started, because it's a lot to jump into.
Okay, good to know. And now we will hear from Erica Berman. She's founder of Veggies to Table in Newcastle. Erica, good to have you join us.
Hey, Cindy.
So you started Veggies to Table during the pandemic, right? Tell us what you do and why you decided to start this farm.
2019, and we are a grow-to-donate farm. Everything we grow, we donate to people who are food insecure, and we started the farm when we learned just how bad the problem of food insecurity and hunger was in Maine. 1 in 4 to 5 children and 1 in 7 adults go to bed hungry daily in Maine.
So tell us what you do about that.
So we grow top quality organic produce and flowers that we donate to local people. We're in Midcoast, Maine, in Newcastle. So we donate to pantries, schools, summer lunch programs, low-income housing, sharing tables around the community. And we grow over 85 different types of organic fruit, veggies, herbs, and flowers with like 200 different varieties. So we're trying to restore dignity to people who have lost sort of one of those most basic things in life, you know, the choice of what to eat.
Wow. So is this something that's been challenging and difficult, or is it sounds so idyllic?
And what we're doing is by grants, donors, corporate sponsors, and we started literally right before the pandemic. So, fundraising during a pandemic was really challenging, but it's been amazing. We've had incredible support from the community, but it is, as everyone said, farming is never ending, and running a nonprofit is also sort of, there's a lot to it. So, but it's very rewarding too, as well.
Thank you, Erica, for sharing all that. Erica Berman is with Veggies to Table in Newcastle. Rhiannon, I wanted to circle back to you. Is this something that, you know, is something a trend also that we're seeing as folks who are going to farming for reasons like helping the community?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, again, you know, to Anne's point from earlier, people are coming at this sometimes as a second career for all kinds of reasons. Maybe they want to give back, they want to continue to be of service, or maybe they just want sort of a more fulfilling career. And we do recognize food insecurity here in Maine as being a significant issue. We also know we farm about 1 acre per person here. So we farm about 1.3 million acres, according to the USDA National Agriculture Statistics Service. And we have about 1.3 million people here. Ideally, if we can remove some of the barriers, we can feed Maine. We also know, you know, we're sort of at the end of the line here. So folks are challenged in getting inputs and getting products into our stores. Things cost a little bit more. That inevitably leaves people behind. When folks like Erica are recognizing that, and other people, the Mainers Feeding Mainers program through Good Shepherd Food Bank supports Mainers who are growing for food pantries. The gleaning initiatives and food councils have stepped up to reduce food waste and also support charitable food donation systems. And the state of Maine, Department of Ag, Conservation and Forestry partnered with DHHS and Maine Federation of Farmers Markets to actually help supply EBT machines at a reimbursed rate for farmers so that we could accept SNAP and EBT on our farms, those of us that have farm stands. And as Anne pointed out, the senior share program exists as well. So we have a plethora of places for people to plug in. We are getting inquiries at rural development around our community facilities program. People want to know about standing up their own food pantry type systems. We do see that there's more and more fresh food coming into those places. It's part of people's plan. And I think a lot of some of the value-added production that we're also seeing, we do have a value-added producer grant program. And I think some of the value-added production we're seeing has an eye toward charitable food systems as well. We actually, today I'm calling in from my car because I've been meeting with a broccoli producer who is engaged in a value-added production operation with Good Shepherd and Harvesting Good and W.R. Allen. So it's sort of a great way to grow our economy. People are able to grow jobs, to have good, clean agricultural jobs in this space, but then also to benefit their neighbors and communities. It checks a lot of boxes.
Great. And Anne, did you want to add to that?
Everything she said, ditto. she's got it nailed down. I love it.
How
she's able to, she's able to tie the economic benefits, which is, you know, I'm kind of left of that in the production and just trying to get people up to set their businesses. But I did want to, if Erica is still on the line and for the listeners, Veggies to Table, So they do an amazing job with some of their fundraising. And so if the listeners can get a chance to do that, one of my favorite fundraising campaigns that she has is they have access to an apartment in Paris and they raffle that off. I know they raffled it off last year. I think they're probably going to continue to do it, but that's just one of the most fun things. Like somebody from Maine, you know, gets to go to Paris and helps you know, continue to the wonderful work that Veggies Disabled is doing by donating all everything that they grow. They donate. They don't take money from anybody that needs the food. So great program. Just wanted to plug that.
Sure. Well, thank you. And we are taking another break now. We're talking about new farmers in Maine. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we are learning about people getting into farming in Maine, what it takes, and how to learn all the ins and outs of running a farm. With me, Isabel Mullen with Russellwood Farm, Rhiannon Hampson with USDA Rural Development in Maine, and Ann Martin with UMaine Cooperative Extension. Join our conversation. Send us a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on social media, or call 1-800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Alicia Guerrero. She's owner and operator of Naughty Sisters Sea Farm in Yarmouth. Thanks for joining us, Alicia.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you're not farming livestock or crops, and the name of your farm kind of hints at that. It's Naughty Sisters, as in nautical sisters, right? Tell us about what it is you do.
So I own a small-scale oyster and scallop farm in Yarmouth, Maine. We primarily are growing oysters, and we started in about 2020. So it takes about 2 to 3 years to bring a product to market. So we're just coming on to that point to kind of scaling production this year. I'm the primary operator. And then this week, actually, my sister Amy has just graduated college and has moved to Portland yesterday to join me in managing the farm this year.
Well, congratulations to her. And you just gave us a tip off that you are one of the very young people who are starting and getting into farming if your sister's just graduating from college. So how old are you and what motivated you to start a farming operation?
So I'm 24 years old and, you know, I'm from Belfast, Maine, where there was a proposal for a large land-based salmon farm that really piqued my interest. I was really curious about what that meant for my community. Prior to that, I had always been involved and interested. I had initially gone to college to study sustainable agriculture and ended up transferring and finding myself in the realm of environmental policy and planning. And I really knew I wanted to be somewhere in the realm of water quality or fisheries, but I didn't know what that quite meant. And somewhere along the way, I found myself on an oyster farm. I've always loved seafood, and I'd never had an oyster. And it was this beautiful intrinsic fall day, and I just fell in love. And the next thing I knew, I was, instead of going to graduate school, I was placing a deposit down on oyster equipment.
Wow. Good for you. So have there been difficult parts for you so far?
Certainly. There's definitely been some challenges in terms of, like, beyond just starting a business as a young person, but starting during basically deep COVID. I'd placed the deposit on equipment mid-February, and then, you know, just 1 month later, the world was shutting down. So it became a very unique experience to try to start a business, and particularly on the water. I didn't come from a family on the working waterfront, so it was a very new experience for me, and I had a lot of allies and mentors in the industry who were excited to help me get my farm started, but also you know, it was a time where we were being extremely cognizant about exposure to people, traveling across the state. I was living at my parents' home in Belfast while establishing a business in Yarmouth, where I'd kind of developed that community in the aquaculture realm. So beyond that, it's just been learning to, you know, go from a novice boat handler to now I hold my captain's license with U.S. Coast Guard, learning a lot of different ways to, you know, lose oysters. They say you're not an oyster farmer until you've killed a million. And we're not even close to that yet. So I guess I'm an honorary farmer for now.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for joining us today, Alicia. Alicia Guerrero owns Naughty Sisters Sea Farm in Yarmouth. And she's led me into this Facebook comment from Heather, who mentions being judged by the older generation. Lots of the older generation farmers do not respond well to change. So when the new farmers come with their new ideas, they're judged and challenged at making their own path. Isabel, do you have any comment based on that?
I would say that I'm really privileged to work with my uncle, who has been a dairy farmer his entire life and has incredible experiential knowledge. I also, you know, am someone who studied for a long time in school, both undergrad and graduate school, and have this intense desire to go out and acquire knowledge and bring it back. And so there are definitely times when my shiny new ideas from reading a blog on the internet or some recently published article are met with not only the reality of the farm, but also maybe some desire to kind of keep things going the way they are. So I think that's true across all industries. I think it's unique to farming because there's a lot of family dynamics oftentimes, or at least in maybe the dairy space. But I think it's important to find balance. And for as a young person, you know, I've been fortunate to have this really incredible career where I got a lot of great experience and I'm able to kind of stand up for myself in spaces where maybe I'm looked down upon as being a young face. I think I'm actually older than I look. So a lot of times I am at conversations with people who expect me to have less to contribute to a conversation than I feel I do. And so I would just encourage any young person who is in a space like that to just really be comfortable having those conversations, or maybe not be comfortable, but challenge themselves to have those conversations, because that's when I think everyone benefits, whether it's a farm owner or a business manager or something like that, when there's a dialogue back and forth.
Great. Let's go to Jesse, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Jesse. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call, and thanks for all you guys do. I can relate to the hard work and missing funerals and that sort of thing. I'm being a commercial fisherman between here and Alaska, so I'm out there. And now lobstering, kind of a farmer. We feed the lobsters until they're big enough to keep, so even though they're out in the wild running around. But I guess my question is, after things leave the farm, is there infrastructure here or encouraged infrastructure for processing, be it for livestock or even dairy and produce? Like, I know friends in Western New York had the great farms and ConAgra was there, and then ConAgra left town and they were stuck there with a bunch of grape fields. Are you guys locked into these larger companies of the world, or is there any encouragement and infrastructure for local processing? Like, I know our lobsters, a lot of them go to Canada to be processed now, and there's not a lot of friendly environment, you know, for someone to want to start a lobstering processor here. But is there anything in place for that? I think that's my question.
Rhiannon, go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad you asked. This is one of my favorite things to talk about, is processing infrastructure. And by the way, I would highlight that USDA does count aquaculture and oftentimes a lot of seafood production as being agricultural production. So I would never want people to think that they're excluded from our programming because they are a seafood harvester or processor. But yes, we have several food supply chain programs that we've been rolling out rapidly in the last couple of years at the federal level to complement what's been going on at the state level. So in terms of livestock processing, we have everything is an acronym. We exist in an alphabet soup at USDA, but we have MPEP, which is the Meat and Poultry Processing Expansion Program. We have an MPEP intermediary relender, which CEI has stepped forward to work with. So that's the Meat and Poultry Processing Intermediary Relending Program. So they lend to small processors. We have the Food Supply Chain Loan Guarantee Program. We have a plethora of processing infrastructure programming dollars going out the door right now. And if anyone wants information, I mean, please always feel free to contact me at the state office.
Great. Thank you. And thanks for your call, Jesse. And let's go to Steve, who's calling in from Chester. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me, and to all the panel members for the work that you do on this very important issue. My fiance and I are both from out of state. We're younger, especially in terms of Maine younger. our main focus with the nonprofit that we formed really came from having experienced what it's like being a first-year farmer and the many challenges that come with that. Our nonprofit is the Maine Homesteaders Alliance. It mostly focuses on smaller and mid-sized growers and their interest in entering the market. So our mission really, though, is building redundancy in the state's food economy, taking a more systems thinking approach, looking at the entire food economy as a whole and the systems that are in place for it. Obviously, that requires a real diversity of farmers of different sizes, interconnecting food establishments with good policy, reliable supply chains, community buy-in. So we're really not only farmers ourselves, like some of the other callers, but also running this nonprofit to hopefully create a much stronger and much more redundant food system.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Steve. Anybody want to comment?
Can I say welcome? I mean, Maine needs warm bodies. He highlighted that they're on the younger end. I think our average age of Maine farmers is 57 right now. So it's exciting to hear of people wanting to come in and bring new and innovative ideas.
Great. Thanks for calling. And we have a note here from Michael on Facebook about the solar industry that's often viewed to be in direct opposition to farming. And he suggests that it's actually a good opportunity for would-be grazers and farmers, that the state of Maine needs more folks raising large flocks of sheep to be used in dual use or co-location agriculture. So that is one of the other things happening statewide. I want to just go ahead to call so that we can get to a few more folks. So let's see, Alan, let's click you in here. Alan calling from Winterport. Go ahead. What did you want to ask? Oops. I'm not sure if we've got Alan there. So let's try. Not able to get to our caller right now. So I think Alan wanted to ask about old stone walls on his property and wondering how you would find out if someone wanted to use those for goat or cattle or whatever. How would that work?
That's a great...
Yeah. Go ahead.
So, I mean, I'm definitely not an expert in this field, but I am a member of a lot of Facebook groups that have a lot of resource sharing or, people looking for resources. I think a lot of farmers in particular are very resourceful in how they acquire stuff they need for their farm. So I think if you're not on social media, reaching out to a friend or neighbor who might be and having them post in some of those groups would be an easy way to connect, in particular locally, people who might be able to use those.
All right. Alan, are you there? Were you able to hear that?
I'm here. Thanks. No, I was offering my land to the apprentice program at MOFCA. I will call them up and see if there's someone who wants to use some of this. I know that there's these transfer of ownership programs to the Maine Farmland Trust. I'm not ready to do that yet, but I have land that if the trees were cut down between these stone walls, it could be definitely used for people wanting to start out in sheep or cattle or even goat raising, although it would probably have to be higher for goats. And I just had one other comment. Please encourage the small scale, the woman from Belfast who was concerned about the huge Nordic Aqua Farm. First of all, we shouldn't call them farms. They're factory operations. But I think encouraging the small-scale scallop and oyster industry is great for Maine. It creates far more jobs than these big industrial operations, which are highly automated. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thanks for calling, Alan. And I just want to make sure we can squeeze in another caller. So let's see if we can go to Garrison. Garrison, calling from Cape Natick. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for all the guests today. I'm actually transitioning older, leaving my corporate job in a few months and starting to do some farming here in Cape Natick. And I'm building a roadside stand and building, growing vegetables here and selling them that way. I think it's also a great way to add to the community. There's a network of us that work together. I just wanted to hear from your guest about the smaller home side or roadside farming and how that contributes to our goal of having more sustainable food system.
Anne, we just have about a minute. Did you want to take that?
I would say we encourage everybody to do everything they can. And I don't know if you listened to the first part of the show, but you know, we talk about just doing this food revolution thing one small farm at a time. So absolutely, you know, get your product out there to your community. They will support you with and welcome you with wide open arms. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Garrison, for your call. And I just want to close quickly with a note from Jenny Tilton Flood, who is a dairy farmer who's a leader and mentor in the farming community. She said she wants to welcome all the folks who are new to farming in Maine. We are definitely a family that needs to get larger, better, and stronger. I remember being new too many years ago, and I want to know what we can do to help make that newness better. So hopefully some of the things we've talked about on today's show answer that question. Thank you all for joining us today. Rhiannon Hampson is a farmer and Maine State Director for USDA Rural Development. Ann Martin is the program coordinator for the Boots to Bushels program with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. And Isabel Mullen is a dairy farmer who is with Russell Wood Farm in Kittery. Today's sound engineer was KG Akimuladun. Visit mainecalling.org to find our past shows and to subscribe to Maine Calling's weekly newsletter. Tomorrow on the program, we'll learn about efforts to alleviate Maine's affordable housing crisis. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.